TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Manny Hill. No Dane Moore this week as he is in Dallas, and he and I have conflicting travel schedules, so you guys get Manny Hill for a second day this week, a rare second appearance on Raised by Wolves.
He got to watch Luke alive, though.
He did get to watch Luke alive. That him. Much I am very jealous of. He is, I don't know if he's flying to OKC or flying back from Dallas today, but he's doing that, and I'm flying to Cleveland later this evening. So our travel schedules didn't mesh. So here we are. But the Wolves have now played just about a quarter of their season.
Yeah.
Like when they get done with the next quarter of basketball, it will be officially a quarter of the way through the season. So I want to talk about what this team looks like at the quarter mark, who we would give our awards to, what awards they would get both on the Wolves. And then a little bit later today, I do want to dive into the rest of the NBA because I think that there are some fascinating awards races in very early stages across the NBA. One of them involves the Wolves. Most of them certainly don't, but I think it's certainly a very interesting thing. So Wolves are 10-10 through 20 games, which, Manny, I know you and I were both more on the pessimistic end of things. I think I was a tad more pessimistic than you about this team during the preseason.
Yep.
But I'm going to speak for both of us here and say that they are in a better place than we thought they would be.
Yeah, 100% agree. Yeah, I think that right now at 10-10, if you would have told me before the season started that the Wolves would be at the quarter point of the season 10-10, I'd have been like, okay, I'm good with that.
Yeah,
totally good with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Like, because I would have thought through 20 games that they would have been probably at best like 8-12.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I might have expected them to be 7-13.
Yeah.
Whatever. But good for them because they've won. They've won on the road. They haven't figured out how to win at Target Center yet for some reason, but they have figured out a way to win on the road for the most part. There are still some things I think need to be cleaned up. Their three-point defense is something that was very evident last night that cost them the game. Dallas was, I think, 4 of 26 through the first three quarters, and then the fourth quarter they go 7 for 11, and you think, oh, well, that's gaudy, that's outrageous, that's not repeatable. Well, the Wolves are like 22nd, in three-point defense. So yeah. It's not really all that shocking. Now, did Dallas get hot at the wrong time for Minnesota? Yeah. But 4 of 26 is also the other end of the spectrum. You're like, this is not sustainable here because of who the Wolves are defensively. So you knew that was going to kind of bite them a little bit at the end, and it did.
Yeah, I mean, and when you look at Dallas, I'm not sure where Dallas ranks as far as, you know, three-point shooting around the league. But
They are 10th in three-point shooting.
So they're one of the better three-point shooting teams in the league. So you have to think that through three quarters, if the Mavericks were, what, 4 for 26? From behind the arc, that you have to think that law of averages would probably at some point in the game start to go into their favor, and you combine that with the Wolves being bad at defending it, it's a recipe for a loss, and that's what happened.
I will say, and to the Wolves' credit, and I understand that this was the second night of a back-to-back for Dallas. They played in New Orleans the night before against the Pelicans and stomped on them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the Wolves did as good of a job as anybody has this year on Luka Doncic. Now, he still put up 22 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. Like, that's still a really good stat line that you would take from any player any night. But I thought that the Wolves did a terrific job defending him in a way that teams really haven't. Now, they couldn't slow down some ancillary pieces like Dwight Powell going 9 of 9 from the floor with a lot of that damage being done in pick and roll with Luka.
Right.
And Jalen Brunson scoring 16 points off the bench, 14 of which were in the fourth quarter, is what lost that game for the Wolves. But I thought that they did a terrific job defending Luka, and they deserve credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, he has been, when you consider like how well, I mean, he's been great all season, but when you consider how well he's been playing the last handful of games for them, I mean, they've done about as good a job as you could ask for. And really, if you would have told me that Luka was going to have, 22 points, but he was going to shoot 8 for 22, 1 of 8 from 3, with 5 turnovers, I would have thought, oh, it was a decent chance the Wolves would have won that game.
If you would have told me that the Wolves would outscore Dallas by 16 points when Luka Doncic was on the floor, I would have said the Wolves won by 25.
Yeah.
The Wolves blew out the Mavericks. That's exactly what my thought would have been, but they couldn't stop Dallas's bench. Every single player that came off the bench for Dallas that played significant minutes was, their plus minus was double digits in the positives. I think the lowest one was like plus 11.
Yeah.
That's where that game was won for Dallas.
Jalen Brunson was a plus 21.
Yeah, in 18 minutes, I think it was.
And he was good, to his credit. He was really good for them.
He helped to win that game.
He picked up the slack when Luka had kind of an off night.
And I want to touch a little bit more on this game before we get to the awards that we're going to hand out. But sure. Andrew Wiggins had a rough shooting night again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay at this point, I do think. He's not always going to have rough shooting nights. He's not always going to have good shooting nights.
Mm-hmm.
He was 7 of 24 shooting last night. But what really impressed me is, one, the attentiveness defensively that just hasn't been there in previous years.
Three blocks.
He's had multiple blocks in four of his last five games. That's something Andrew has not done for the entirety of his career. And now he's doing it. And I think that this is a really good sign for him. But also, he got to the free throw line 11 times. And
that's
two of his
huge.
Last three games, he's gotten to the free throw line he's taken double-digit free throw attempts. When Andrew's not shooting the ball well, and he was 7 of 24 last night, getting to the line 11 times salvages that game offensively for him.
Well, that's part of what makes James Harden so good, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, and I'm not comparing Andrew to James Harden. He's not at that level, obviously.
No, but it's how you can be efficient on bad nights.
Right. That's why you can look at a box score and see, oh, James Harden went 9 for 28 shooting, but he went 13 out of 14 at the free throw line, and you're okay with that because he's still finding ways to be an efficient scorer, even though he's not maybe having a good shooting night. And if Andrew can continue to get to the free throw line, you're okay. You can live with 7 for 24 on most nights. If he can get to the free throw line with double-digit attempts, you can live with an off shooting night because he's going to make up for it when he gets to the line.
Yeah, and I want to say that's exactly what Harden did the other night. Now, granted, one of his misses against San Antonio was not a miss.
Yeah, should have counted.
As we know, but I want to say he got to the line a ton because I don't think he had a good shooting game. I don't think that was the case. I think that he had a really rough game, and it turns out that, okay, you can do that, but if you get to the line 25 times, which I think he did, that changes the equation.
Yeah, I look at Andrew's game now, and it's what was so frustrating with him for 5 years was if he had a bad shooting night, it was so glaring because he would not impact the game in any other way.
Yes. That's different.
Yeah. He wouldn't defend. He wouldn't rebound. He wouldn't make plays for anybody else. But this is so different because he's rebounding. He's making plays. I mean, I know he only had one assist last night, but he's getting to the free throw line more. He's blocking shots. He had three block shots last night. Like, he's doing other things that you don't have to highlight and talk about him shooting 7 for 24 because he's doing other things to sort of make up for that and help the team win in other ways. And obviously, they didn't win last night, but still, you're not as discouraged by his performance last night because of the other things that he did on the floor.
Yeah, and I think for me, the defense is a big thing. Those block shots were really terrific. The next one seemed more ridiculous than the previous one every time. It was very impressive. But the getting to the line thing is the biggest thing for me.
I saw your eyes get kind of big there. Did you just look at the Rockets Spurs box score?
Yes.
The
thing that made them big wasn't even Harden's line, which Harden got 50 points on only 11 made field goals, which is really hard to do, people.
Yes.
He went 24 of 24 at the line. He had a bad shooting game.
4 of 20 from 3.
4 of 20 from 3, 11 of 38 from the floor. Like, that's really bad. But he salvaged it because he got to the line, and James Harden is better at getting to the line than anyone in basketball. He is the best at it.
Yep.
And that is a skill. That is absolutely a skill, but that's how you salvage a rough night. What my eyes got really big at was Russ's line.
Yeah,
Russ scored 19 points on 30 shots. Oh my goodness, that's bad. I did not realize how hilariously inefficient that was.
Oh my God. That
19
is
points on 30 field goal attempts. That is comically hilarious.
That is like playing 2K on the hardest level possible.
That's like me when I played one of the guys from the Wolves 2K team. Like, that's what I was.
That's so bad.
19 points on 30 shots. That is hilariously inefficient. Yeah. That's what my eyes lit up about. But yes,
wow.
The fact that Wiggins has been getting to the line, because he had 14 free throw attempts against San Antonio. He hasn't shot the ball that well lately, but yep. He's doing other things that really do help to salvage a positive impact. And I think that's a huge thing.
It's massive. And, you know, we've talked so much about, you know, okay, Andrew's, you know, and I know Dane's talked about this. Andrew's probably never going to live up to his contract. But if you can make him live up to half of what he's making, or, you know, 60% of what he's making.
Yeah.
If you can turn him, if he can be a, instead of a $27 million a year player, if he can be a $16 or $17 million a year type of player, at this point, in year six, considering what years one through five have looked like, that's, you know, you'll take that right now. And yeah. He's certainly looking like, with what he's done this year, he's certainly looking like a $16 or $17 million a year player.
Yeah, if not more.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been really good. And there's no question the award he's getting on the Wolves right now is most improved player.
Yeah,
without
absolutely.
Question. And he is the one that when we talk about the NBA awards, we're going to see where Andrew Wiggins fits into that, because he's in the most improved player for the league discussion. Like, he has put himself in that category right now. It's nothing short of impressive, the transformation that Andrew Wiggins has made, because he went from, as you said, being one of the worst contracts in basketball to, one, not being that anymore, two, being someone that contributes to winning. There are a number of games that you can look at this year. If Andrew Wiggins doesn't have the game he had, the Wolves don't win.
Yeah.
There were not very many games like that last year or in previous years where, you know what, Andrew Wiggins did this and that's why they won. You could not have said that very many times last year. You can already say it a handful of times this year, and they only have 10 wins so far. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and when you factor in other guys have been injured, and, you know, and Andrew's missed a couple of games himself for various reasons, but you look at the games that Cat missed, and Andrew was there.
Yeah.
And he contributed. He was the main catalyst to them winning those games, and you know, this is really good. And our concern going into this season was just how was Andrew going to look and would we see improvement? I think we both thought we would see some improvement, but Danny, I did not think I would see this much of improvement.
No, I thought he'd be better, but I still thought that he would be, I thought he would maybe get good enough to the point where, okay, the Wolves might be able to move in this next summer.
Right.
I thought maybe he could get to that point. Now it's like, do you want to move this guy?
Yeah.
Like, this guy's worth keeping. If you get this version of Andrew Wiggins moving forward, he is worth having. You don't want to move him. These types of, you can't find this type of guy. That's what it's turned into, and I didn't envision that happening.
Yeah, and I think it's going to continue. I don't think this is a mirage.
There are so many reasons, and we talked about buying land on Wiggins Island in the last episode of Raised by Wolves here.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many reasons to feel that this is sustainable. And I do think that now he's not going to be the guy that averaged 36-5 over a 5-game stretch. He's going to have streaks like that, but now that's what his streaks are going to be. And his off nights are going to be, okay, well, he can still get you 24-4. Like, that's very good.
You feel like his off nights are going to be much closer to what we saw last night.
His bad games now feel very bearable. And his bad games in the past were, I can't watch this guy play basketball. And that alone is the
painful.
Biggest. Yes, that
was
is such a huge jump to make in a year. And honestly, Andrew deserves a ton of credit for this. He's one of the most improved players in the NBA, Manny.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I mean, we can credit Gerson for coming in and sort of instilling a culture. We can certainly give credit to Ryan for being sort of the buffer of that culture onto Andrew, so to speak, and as the head coach and everything. But I think a lot of this credit needs to go to Andrew directly, because
he deserves the most credit for it.
Yeah, because he could have. Look, Andrew's going to get his money and his contract is fully guaranteed. He could sit back and just continue to do the same things that he's been doing for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And there really wouldn't be anything the Wolves could do about it. But he has taken it upon himself to actually take the steps to improve as a player, and he deserves a ton of credit for that.
Certainly does, and that's why he's been the most improved, and we'll touch on him more. But MVP's obviously Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah, no question.
He's doing enough nationally to where I do think he's going to start to get some recognition. more so moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been fantastic. This team was always going to go as far as Towns could take them. Now, Wiggins being an uplifting thing, I think, has helped raise both their ceiling and their floor for this year. But it's still the Karl Anthony Towns show.
Yeah, he's been incredible, and he's improved on the defensive end. And he's not getting in foul trouble as much as he has in the past. He doesn't look like he's as frustrated. He doesn't look like he gets as frustrated easily as he has in the past. And I think that's been big. And, you know, he's improved as a playmaker, too. And, you know, and part of that is just the system that they're running. He's been great. He's been terrific. And, you know, now at this point, just don't get into a fight with Joel Embiid anymore. That's all.
Yeah,
you got
well,
that out
I mean,
of your system,
we don't
Cap,
have to worry about that for a while still. They don't. I forget when they play next. I think it's in March, I want to say.
I think March, yeah.
So we don't have to worry about that for a while. But what he's done is really impressive. I mean, looking at his numbers, he's averaging a shade under 26 points, which I honestly thought that number might be a little bit higher, mm-hmm. in part because I didn't think Andrew would be this good. So I thought Carl would have to do more than he's been doing.
Take more shots.
But
and
over 12 rebounds. His assists have really jumped from under 3 to over 4.
4.3,
he was at 2.7 last year. He's at 4.3 now. Shooting 50% from the field, 42.7% from three-point range. If he would have been able to figure out why he couldn't make free throws in training camp instead of letting that linger into the regular season, he would be a 50-40-90 candidate.
Yeah. And the other part of this, too, Danny, is he's averaging 33 minutes a game.
Yeah. Which,
I mean,
you'll take. I mean, that's last year he was around 33 as well, but under Tibbs, it had been much higher.
Yeah.
And part of the, again, part of the reason he was only at 33 last year, I think, is because he found himself in foul trouble so often. He's committing a half foul less per game, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but it is.
It is.
That's a
it's
big
huge.
Difference.
Yeah, and, you know, and a lot of times when you're committing fouls early, it, you know, if you pick up two quick fouls in the first 6 minutes of the game, you're going to the bench.
It
most
cuts
likely.
At least 4 minutes off of your playing time, if not more.
It throws the rotation off a little bit, and Ryan has to make adjustments to, you know, who's going to play more and things like that. And it can really throw you off of your rhythm for the rest of that game, too. And he's done a really nice job, I think, save for one game, of staying out of foul trouble, staying out of early foul trouble. And, you know, again, like we credited Andrew, I mean, Carl deserves a lot of credit for the – we knew he could be a great scorer. We knew he could shoot the three and things like that. But the other little things he's added to his game, too, I think Carl deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yes, he does. And he's been much better defensively this year than
– Yeah, he's been –
And
really
I didn't
good there.
Think he necessarily played well defensively last night. But I do think that he's been a very good – defender so far this year, and I think he deserves a lot of credit because 2 years ago he was a bad defender.
Yeah.
Last year I thought he took some steps in the right direction. He was still a little below average, but this year he's average at worst. He's probably an above average defender. And you know what? Again, credit to Ryan, credit to Gerson, but credit to Carl and David Vanderpool deserves credit here too. But and credit to Carl. He deserves the most credit for improving himself.
Yeah. And when you're that good offensively, you don't necessarily have to be a Kevin Garnett type of defender at that position.
No,
but if you
don't.
Can just be adequate, if you can be average or above average, every team in the league would take that with if you pair that with what Carl does on the offensive end. So, yeah, he's been great. I'm not really surprised by any of it either. I mean, I think the Wiggins stuff is a little bit surprising, but I'm not really surprised by anything that Carl has done.
No, and it's really, really, really impressive.
Yeah, he's great
to see. So
he's fantastic.
He's MVP. Do you think? And I made one of my bold predictions prior to this season, which is not something that's necessarily intended to be accurate all the time. It's a bold prediction. That's what it's for fun, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Carl Anthony Towns would get MVP votes, or at least a vote, one singular MVP vote. Now, he's not going to win the award. He's definitely not going to win the award this year.
Right.
But it would not surprise me if he shows up on someone's ballot with how good he's been and how much better than expected the Wolves have been. If he shows up on someone's ballot, I wouldn't be stunned.
No. I mean, he's – especially, I think, if the Wolves can keep themselves in the playoff conversation?
I do think they have to make the play or get very close to the playoffs for it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like if they keep themselves in the conversation, somebody's going to look at Cat and say, okay, I'll give him a vote. Why not? You know, if he continues this level of play, obviously, and, you know, he stays healthy and he's, I would think he's going to make the All-Star team this year.
Certainly.
And I wonder, I'll be curious about All-NBA for him.
Yeah. Well, because right now, he's got it. I also think that it's going to depend on how Anthony Davis is classified. If Anthony Davis is classified as a center, he's going to make All-NBA, and that takes up a spot. But right now I would have him slotted in because Nikola Jokic has not been better than Towns. Joel Embiid has been good. He's probably the other guy on there because Rudy Gobert hasn't been great.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still really good defensively, but what Towns has done offensively, I think, trumps that at this moment.
Yeah, and what was kind of the separator with Rudy and Cat last year was that Rudy made the playoffs, and Cat was on a team that was 10 games under 500.
Yeah.
You know, if the Wolves had been a playoff team, Cat probably would have been that third
All-NBA center. Potentially could have been,
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see if the Wolves can keep themselves in playoff conversations if Cat ends up as an All-NBA player. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's something certainly to monitor. All right, do you have an unsung hero for the Wolves as things stand right now, Manny Hill?
Kata Bates-Diop.
That's a really good one. I am as big of a Kata Bates-Diop fan as you're going to find. Like I thought before others that, okay, this guy can play at this level, and I'm not trying to take a victory lap on that quite yet, but it looks like that's a pretty promising thought. For me, he hasn't necessarily played enough to be that unsung hero.
That's the only thing. Yeah.
But at this point, Manny, I cannot fathom him not being in the rotation. I think that Ryan Saunders in this organization has a very interesting decision to make whenever Jake Layman returns from that toe injury that he's dealing with. Because, and this could have changed by now, but last time they were at Target Center, he was still in a walking boot. So I don't know how close he is to doing anything on court or anything like that. I don't even believe he went on this trip with them. But you cannot keep Kata Bates-Diop out of the lineup any longer. I honestly think that Trevion Graham's minutes may disappear when Jake Layman gets back.
I think it has to. I mean, I think you – I know what Trevion Graham can give you defensively, but he's just such a liability on
offense. How much
offense.
Of a step up defensively is he from Kata, do we think, though? Like, I don't think it's massive.
I don't know if it's enough to...
an upgrade, but it's not – it's not enough of an upgrade to be like, okay, you are such a minus offensively, but you're solid defensively. I don't think that they can do that.
Yeah, and I know Jake Layman's numbers offensively aren't great right now, but there's so much more upside there when he comes back and he's healthy, and there's so much more that you can do with him on that end of the floor, and he's not going to kill you defensively.
No.
So at this point, like, I think when Jake comes back, I think Trevion Graham is the one that's he's got to be the odd man out for me.
I would have to think that that's something that's going to happen. And he's Kate is just he's an NBA player. And I think that the Wolves need more guys on the floor that they're not going to hurt you on either end of the floor at all. And right now they don't have enough of those guys because it's pretty clear Trevion Graham's a minus offensively.
Is this corner three thing with Kata going to keep up?
Not at the rate it is.
I mean, it's an astronomical rate right now.
He entered yesterday's game. I want to say he was 11 of 14 or 9 of 14 or something in the corners, which is crazy high. Like you can't.
It's just ridiculous.
You cannot shoot at that level moving forward. I mean, last night he was 3 for 3, so he is 10 of. He's 10 of 14 from three right now.
That's
from
the
corners, according to NBA.com, if you pull up his shot chart.
And the reason why I ask is because I wonder if we're going to see, you know, we're certainly going to see some form of regression there. Like, that's a crazy rate.
He's not going to shoot 70% from the corners.
But I think the only thing I'm worried about, and maybe this won't happen, is, like, I look back at last year, like how good Derrick Rose was shooting from three.
Yes.
And then he went like a month without hitting one. Like he just fell off
literally
a cliff. Yeah. Like he fell off a cliff
hyperbole.
As a 3-point shooter after being really, really good for the first half of the season. And so I just wonder if you know, Cade is going to fall off in that department a little bit, but if it'll be a drastic fall off to where it's like, okay, well, this is just not working anymore. But I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this seems like a legit thing that he's going to keep up.
I think so, too. I see no – I mean, again, not at this rate, but Cade, if he can shoot 45% from the corners, that's a huge win.
That's a big weapon to have too, and he and, you know, and he just does a little bit of everything.
He's a good NBA player.
Yeah,
he is a rotation guy at worst, and it's I think that he's a piece that the Wolves, it's worth having for them to keep him moving forward.
Credit to Tibbs, he drafted him.
Tibbs or Scott Layden, whoever wants to take the credit for that, but getting him at what was it 48 overall is a huge mm-hmm. win. Huge win.
When you're in the back, you get a guy at the back half of the second round
yeah.
of the draft. That's,
and
that's a big deal.
And he can contribute like this. That's a huge win for them. All right, so my unsung hero is going to be Gorgui Dieng.
Okay.
Because I didn't think Gorgui could play in this system. I thought that it was going to be too fast-paced for him. I didn't think that he'd be able to hang offensively. And originally, he kind of was out of the rotation. They were only playing Cat and Vonleh at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. And there are still nights where Gorgui is a matchup problem. Like against Houston, he didn't play. He was a DNP coach's decision. He can't match up against Houston, and that's not his fault. That just right. is who he is.
Yep.
But most nights, Gorgui's came to play, and Gorgui's been a winning piece for this team. He's not someone that's going to get a lot of credit. He's never going to be worth his contract. But he's made winning plays, and he has helped this team in a way that I didn't think he would be helping this team, and credit to him for that.
And the best part about it, too, is that you know that Gorgui is at least now still a very reliable player, that the Wolves don't feel like they're in a situation where they have to extend Cat's minutes a little bit more.
Yes.
Or, you know, if Noah Vonleh, who just hasn't really been very good, that you have to play him more because Gorgui's just not really giving you anything. The fact that Gorgui's, you know, albeit, you know, sort of a minor role compared to what it was, you know, 3 years ago when he was basically the starting power forward, he's done enough that it's really sort of picked up the slack for other, you know, for other guys, and that they don't, you know, other guys aren't being overextended or being asked to do things that they may not be capable of doing.
Yes.
So Gorgui deserves a lot of credit for that.
He's certainly good. Does. Certainly does. That's why he's my my unsung hero for the season so far. Any other awards you want to give out, Manny?
You have a sixth man?
It's interesting because they haven't had a consistent sixth man. Like, there's yeah. no first guy off the bench. There's no Lou Williams. There's no Jordan Clarkson. There's no whoever you want to say. Jarrett Culver's been in and out of the starting lineup. Jeff Teague has been now relegated to the bench. Josh Okogie's not been very good offensively. So it is tough to say. I mean, if Jake Layman were healthy and playing,
I was
going to
say, is it kind of Layman by default? Maybe?
By default, sure, but yeah. now he hasn't played in 2 weeks, basically.
Right.
And I think he's going to be a starter when he comes back.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know that there is a sixth man for this group. If Josh could shoot better, that'd be great. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Is there a – what do you think has been a bigger – I don't want to highlight this too much, but who do you think has been a bigger disappointment so far? Noah Vonleh or Jordan Bell? It's for different reasons.
Jordan's
but,
been banged up, but when yeah. he's been able to play, I think he's helped them a lot. Mm-hmm. Like you saw the I forget which game it was. It was one of their many home losses where Jordan Bell checks in and the energy, it was against Phoenix, I want to say, where they just kind of sleptwalk through that game.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, it was Memphis. They just sleptwalked through that game, but Jordan Bell brought energy off the bench when he was given the opportunity to. So yeah. I do think that Jordan Bell minutes are good. He's just not been able to keep himself healthy,
and
that's what hurts
part.
Him. That's what's been disappointing is that he hasn't been able to find his way on the floor because he missed training camp. He was essentially out for all of training camp with that calf strain, and then he comes back and he gets healthy and he hurts his shoulder. So that's what's been disappointing, but I think when he's been healthy, he's been solid. That's been fine.
It's just really too bad because I feel like with this system, I feel like he could be a really big contributor,
sure.
you know, and it's yeah. just unfortunate that he just hasn't been able to consistently get on the floor for, you know, various injuries and things like that.
I would like to see more minutes with him at the four alongside Carl.
Yeah.
And then you can slide Robert Covington to the three, and I think that those lineups can be a lot of fun. Now, Bell's not going to be a huge positive for you offensively, but he's going to go after offensive rebounds. He's not going to space the floor, but he can do little things that
hustle
help.
Plays.
And he knows what he's good at. He had to learn that in Golden State, and that's a huge thing for him. So that's what I've got. My most disappointing player, honestly, is probably Jeff Teague. Jeff has not looked – he hasn't looked healthy to me. He doesn't look as explosive as he once was, and I think that that's a big thing for him. He's not – and he doesn't look confident when he's shooting, and that really hurts them because if he's not going to shoot, he's just one less guy that doesn't space the floor, and he's only shooting 25% from three. That's unacceptable at that position.
Yeah, and it's bad, especially even for him. And Jeff's never been a great three-point shooter. He's always – for the most part, hovered around league average, but
this is bad.
Yeah, this is bad. 25% is like really, really, really bad, even for him. And yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting with him to see if he's ever really going to get going. You know what I mean? And he's in, and I know he's embraced the role, and it's good that he's embrace this new bench role, but this is kind of uncharted territory for him. He hasn't been like a guy that's come off the bench really since I think he was a rookie with Atlanta, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah. Well,
and so, like, you know, I just, it'll be interesting to see if he can find a way to get himself going while also sort of being in a new role that he hasn't had in a really, really long time.
He has not had a season with more than two games played off the bench since 2010-2011, second year in the league.
Mm.
Other than that, he started every game his third year, came off the bench twice his fourth year, started every game, one bench appearance, started every game, one game off the bench last year when he was coming back from injury. They kept him on a minutes restriction for a night, and he played like 23 minutes off the bench. And then this year's obviously been different.
Is this a situation where he just has to kind of shoot himself out of this funk, whatever it is? And he's coming off the injury,
he has to figure something out because he doesn't look confident.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he wants to shoot. And he hasn't been someone that has always looked like they wanted to shoot. That's not been him. Mm-hmm. But it looks like it to an extreme this year, it feels like to me.
Yeah, so... hopefully he can get back on track. That would be big for them.
So next, we're going to dive into the NBA awards across the league because there are a number of them. I think plenty of them are interesting. The Wolves do tie in some cases. So that's what we're going to get into. This is Raised by Wolves. We'll be back right after this quick break.
Okay. We can just go right back into the...
just start talking?
Yep.
All right. So number of NBA awards that are really interesting, Manny. I think we have to start with the MVP because that's the award that everyone talks about the most. It is the most talked about award. From day one, there are different narratives for different players. There are all of those things. So right now I do think that the top four is pretty solidified. Who you want to go with for fifth can be argued, but the top four is some combination of LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, James Harden, and Luka Doncic.
Okay.
Any arguments there?
None.
The fifth is where it gets really interesting. And, of course, who you have at number one is obviously really interesting. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think that a guy like Pascal Siakam for number five makes a lot of sense because he's been really good. And I forget what I was listening to. I was listening to someone's podcast, and it might have been No Dunks on The Athletic.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially compared this to what it was like when Jordan left the Bulls to go play baseball, left the Bulls in quotation marks, to go play baseball. And they still won 55 games, and they were like a game away from going to the conference finals. And Scottie Pippen figured out just how good Scottie Pippen was.
Yep. He was an MVP candidate.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like, kind of, where Pascal Siakam has figured out just how good he is since Kawhi Leonard is gone.
Yeah, he's been... We were talking briefly after we did the podcast the other day, like, because I asked you, like, are you surprised that Toronto has been, like, this good?
15-4 at the time. I think they have another loss now.
Yeah. But. So they're 15-5 as of this show. And I'm really surprised. Like, I thought they would be a playoff team.
I did, too.
But I thought they'd win, like, 45 games and be, like, a 5 or 6 seed or something like that.
I thought that this would be, like, a... you know what? We won the title this last year. We're going on a victory lap, everybody. Yeah. I thought that that's what this was going to be, and I was wrong. I thought that victory lap, like you said, 45 wins, you know, go around the league, show off the ring, you look at the banner before every game.
Kind of like how the Mavericks were the year after they won the title, where they made the playoffs, and Dirk was still there. Dirk was still pretty good, but it wasn't the same.
The magic was gone.
They were like a 7 seed, I think, and Dirk just wasn't quite as good, and they were just sort of enjoying off. You know, pulling off a huge upset and things like that. Yeah, I thought that this, especially after losing Kawhi, and Kawhi was just the absolute catalyst to them winning the title last year. But I thought it was going to be 45, 46 wins, 5 or 6 seed, and, you know, maybe they'll win in the first round if they get a favorable matchup. But, like, I didn't think that they would be 15-4 out of the gate. And Pascal Siakam deserves a ton of credit for this. He has been outstanding.
So who would you, if you had a vote today for the NBA MVP, who would you give it to?
LeBron James.
That's where I'm at too.
Yeah.
I understand what all the numbers say and how good Luka has been and how good Giannis has been and how good James Harden has been. But LeBron James doing what LeBron James is doing in his age 35 seasons after so many people, I don't want to say wrote him off, because I think the whole hashtag washed king narrative is a bit much. Mm-hmm. I understand why he's doing it, because some guys need to create their own motivation. And I think a lot of great players do that. Like Michael Jordan did that. Michael Jordan made stuff up to try and motivate himself. And I think this is in part what LeBron's doing, and I'm okay with that.
Yep.
But I'm not going to use that. But the fact that he's turning 35 later this month, still averaging, 25 points a game, averaging over 11 assists per night, and has recommitted himself defensively in a way we haven't seen since he played in Miami. Like, we did not see this type of defense from LeBron in the regular season ever in Cleveland. Well, the second Cleveland stint, the first Cleveland stint, we saw it every night because he was really good both ends then. Mm-hmm. But the second Cleveland stint, he didn't play defense like this until the playoffs came, and then he flipped a switch. But I think that this is – and I hate to – oh, this is a career award. But honestly, he's someone that should have more than four MVPs.
Yeah.
And I think that as a basketball society, when LeBron retires, if he doesn't win another MVP, we're going to remember everything LeBron did and kind of think to ourselves, how did he only win four MVPs?
Right.
Like, that's kind of the thing. And I don't want to say that this season is that, because I think that he's very deserving of it too. But if it's a tie between he and Giannis and Harden and Luka, like, say all those guys are a bunch at the top, I'm like, well, you know what? LeBron deserves this more.
Yeah. He's been great. And, you know, like, we talked about this. LeBron was sitting at home in the playoffs last spring, watching all these other teams play, watching the Raptors go on the run with Kawhi and the Bucks with Giannis, and hearing all this talk, you know, KD before he got hurt, like all this talk about, you know, well, Kawhi is the best player in the world, or Giannis is the best player in the world.
Everybody bought it.
KD was the best player in the world. And he saw all that. He didn't say a word. Didn't take any shots at anybody else, because he's not, I mean, LeBron has his petty moments.
But he is petty.
Yeah, but he wasn't going to do that.
I mean, the guy put on, the guy had a Halloween party in Cleveland and made cookies of tombstones with the Warriors' names and jersey numbers in October of 2016. Okay? The guy is petty.
He's very petty. But, like, he just sort of laid in the weeds all spring throughout the playoffs, and he listened to all that chatter about all this, you know, this guy's the best player in the world, yada, yada. And got a chance to rest the body, got a chance to clear the mind. Probably knew Anthony Davis was going to be a Laker at some point in the summer.
Or had the idea it was going to happen.
Had the idea that it was going to happen. And now he has come out with a force. And he looks refreshed.
Yes, he does.
He looks like, and you know, and people, I know it was easy for, you know, sort of the LeBron haters, quote unquote, to make fun of him not being in the playoffs last year and everything. But I think, I honestly think, Danny, for this portion now going forward of his career, I think that was one of the best things for him, for to get those couple of months to sort of heal the body. Because think about how much basketball LeBron James played from the time he signed with the Miami Heat till last year.
The guy played in 8 consecutive NBA finals. That has not been done since, like, the Boston Celtics played against milkmen every day.
Yeah.
Like, that's how long that's been.
Yeah.
That takes a toll on you, man.
Yeah.
That's why we've seen the Warriors break down.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not attributing, Klay Thompson tore his ACL because of that, or Kevin Durant, his Achilles, and Steph, his hand. But, like, Draymond continuously being beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that Klay Thompson tore his ACL because he played so many basketball games in that period of time.
Right.
But you know what? It didn't help. It didn't help KD go into three finals in 3 years.
No.
Steph has been beat up a lot over these last 5 years because it takes such a toll on your body, and LeBron did it 8 years in a row.
And to play at the level that he played to is just astonishing. So, yeah, I think missing the playoffs last year for LeBron was a blessing in disguise for him. Yeah,
I agree.
He looks great. He's my MVP right now.
All right, who would be your coach of the year? I don't know that we'll necessarily get through all of the awards, but who do you have for coach of the year? Because I think that there are a number of interesting candidates. And I know who mine would be right now, but I could be swayed a number of different ways.
I think it's Nick Nurse right now.
That's who mine is, too.
Yeah.
Because of what they lost in one of the five best players in the NBA and what they did last year and what the expectations were, I think that he is right now my coach of the year. But I want to dive into some of the other candidates who I think that maybe won't get mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eric Spoelstra deserves some talk of it because he's been great. I can't say Brad Stevens because I've seen this story in Boston before where Brad Stevens takes a Boston team that everyone's counted out, and the next thing you know, they're down by 50 in the conference finals. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do that right now because he excels at getting guys that – are counted out to believe in themselves and each other and win. And he's really, really good at that. But when he actually has talent, that's when he's at a disadvantage. Frank Vogel's been terrific, I think, as well, when getting that team to do what they've done defensively. I think Rick Carlisle, and I understand that Luka has taken a leap of all leaps, but Rick Carlisle overseeing that deserves credit too.
Yeah. Here's kind of a sleeper. What do you think about Nate McMillan?
Nate McMillan is the coach of probably the least talked about playoff team in basketball.
Yeah.
And they've done this so far. They're, as we're recording, 14-7. They've done this without Victor Oladipo, who did go on a G League assignment for practice the other day. So that's a really positive sign for them and for him.
Yep. And having Malcolm Brogdon has helped.
Yeah.
Has helped sort of pick up some of that slack.
Yes. But I'll be very interested to see what they look like when they get Oladipo back. But they've been fantastic.
Yeah, they've been really good. And, you know, it was interesting. Like, when they fired Frank Vogel and they promoted Nate McMillan, I was thinking, okay, Nate McMillan, kind of a retread.
And I really liked Frank Vogel.
Yeah.
I thought Frank Vogel was going to work out in Orlando.
Yeah, yeah. I think he certainly got a raw deal in Orlando. But so, yeah, when they promoted Nate McMillan, I was thinking, okay, he's been a head coach before. I get it. Had some success in Seattle and Portland, but, like, But he's been good. He's done a great job, certainly this year without Oladipo. So he's kind of a dark horse. But for me right now, it's Nick Nurse. Like, this is just what they're doing. You lose Kawhi like that, and you kind of have this pressure of being the defending champs, and to come out and look as good as they have so far has been it's been really impressive.
Most improved player. This might be the most fascinating race for me.
I think it's Andrew, dude.
I can see that. I don't know that I'm ready to say it's Andrew because, and this might be an unpopular take, I think it might be Siakam.
Yeah.
I understand he won it last year. But the leap he made from year two to year three, which was last year for him, was really significant. I think the leap he's made from year three to year four, which has been this, has been unprecedented almost. I mean, he went from a guy that was averaging like 7 minutes a game as a rookie to an MVP candidate in 4 years. He's the ultimate player development story. But the argument for Andrew, I think, is very real and does exist.
Yeah, and what's interesting with Toronto, and I think this speaks – this certainly is a credit to Siakam, but it even speaks more to Nick Nurse too. Is like, you know, Kyle Lowry hasn't played a lot.
He's been out. Yeah.
He's been out. Been missed.
He played, time. He played the other night, but he missed like 3 weeks.
Yeah, he's missed time. So, you know, Fred VanVleet, who maybe could be in that conversation too. He's been terrific.
If nothing else, he has made himself a lot of money this summer.
Yeah, yeah. So it's. Yes, I mean, Pascal's been, he's he's been amazing, and that's been like the number one reason I think why the Raptors are where they are, is just the leap that he's taken. And then you factor in Lowry being out. Van Vliet has obviously made a leap too. Yeah, it's been great. He's been fantastic. I've been really, really impressed with the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, and I do think that those are probably the top two candidates right now, mm-hmm. between Siakam and Wiggins. In part because I don't believe in giving this award to a second or third year player. Like, Luka has made an incredible leap from year one to year two, but you're supposed to get a lot better from year one to year two. Now, you're not supposed to be an MVP candidate year two, but you are supposed to improve a lot, right? Like last year, De'Aaron Fox was a hot name. It was his second year. Like, I don't think that that's a guy that should get that award. It should be for a guy like Pascal Siakam, who is at least in year three, or D'Angelo Russell, who was in year four, Victor Oladipo prior to that, who was in year four. Like, that's what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Who's sixth man? Any idea?
It's just the Lou Williams Award.
Lou Williams, yeah.
It's the Lou Williams Award. Defensive Player of the Year.
That's a tough one for me because I feel like I need to see more of the season.
Sure. I would probably go Giannis right now, though. Yeah. I think that he's been really good defensively. And Giannis or maybe give it to someone on the Lakers because they've been fantastic defensively. Maybe give it to Anthony Davis, but mm-hmm. I would go Giannis. Rudy Gobert will probably end up winning it, but Utah hasn't been as good defensively as they need to be for him to do that. But I would expect that to kind of change in the second half of the season.
I think we both knew the Bucks would be good and be near the top of the Eastern Conference. Did you expect them? Are you surprised by 19-3?
No, because they have not played a team over 500 in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Like they play the Clippers tomorrow night, I believe, in Milwaukee, and that'll be interesting to see because everyone should be playing in that game, and that should be there should be all eyes on TVs for that one.
And they've just been kicking the crap out of everybody.
But they haven't played anybody, a really difficult team to prepare for in the regular season.
Yeah.
Their style, Giannis, playing 82 games, it's really difficult when Milwaukee pops up on your schedule to prepare for them. I still don't believe in them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would still pick Philadelphia to win the Eastern Conference over Milwaukee. And you know what? I think Toronto has a fighting chance too.
It's amazing to think about.
Yeah.
You Incredible. Lose Kawhi Leonard and you just sort of keep the train moving. It's okay, very quickly before we get out of here. Who's the first coach to get fired?
Ooh.
Because somebody's going to get
Fizdale.
Fired.
Oh, Fizdale. Fizdale's going to get fired very soon, yeah. I think. I would be surprised if Fizdale makes it to the new year before he gets fired. Because it is just such a dumpster fire in New York.
It's bad.
I don't know whether or not he's a good coach or not. Because when you give a guy a roster that's got 9 power forwards, what do you expect him to do?
Yeah.
You can't make a winning team out of that. I think the front office is a nightmare. Ownership is a nightmare. And firing David Fizdale would be the sweet release of being unemployed. He'd get paid to not be in that toxic situation, and I'm rooting for that for him.
Yeah. I don't know how good a coach he is, but I've always liked him, and that's just such an awful situation in there. And I just, at this point, it's like he's going to get fired. Somebody's going to take that job, but it's just like, nothing is going to change with that organization until ownership changes.
Yeah, I think it's Fizdale. I don't know who next would be. Maybe Boylan in Chicago. But Fizdale is getting canned soon, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. So.
All right, that's Manny Hill. Find him on Twitter at MannyHill84. I am Danny Cunningham. You can find me on Twitter at RealDCunningham. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the all-new Score North mobile app that's available for your Apple and Android devices. We will be back next week, going back to 3 episodes. Sorry, we had I was sick, and it just didn't all work out this week to get a 3rd episode in. But we will be back next week, and we'll talk to you then.